In this episode of The Beatles Come to America, Tom Gallagher, that's me, talks to Andy Nichols of the Paul McCartney-centric podcast called Two Legs. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
The Beatles come to America. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome to the Beatles Come to America. My name is Tom Gallagher. I'm half of the host of the podcast. The Beatle guru, Brooke Halpin, is not on the Zoom call today, but I am lucky I was able to get Andy Nichols, one of the hosts of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I am a big fan of their work and their dedication to the source material. That's all things Paul McCartney and all things the Beatles. The interview is a big thank you for taking the lead and giving all the McCartney fans a place to go to. So now let's start the show.
You got it.
Yes. No. I'm grateful. I did a podcast called Beatles Come to America. We did
Yep.
the U.S. albums. We went at a limited thing because Brooke is like he was 18 years old in 1964, so he has a lot of projects. He's doing a movie about the Beatles and he's trying to get finance and all that good stuff. So it
Gotcha.
had. Ours had to have an ending. We couldn't keep on going. But for you with two legs, man, you are just trudging along. You're 5 years into this.
Yeah.
I think you have to almost explain it to the guests. Like, this interview is one as a thank you because I'm a big fan of your work. Yeah,
Well,
and I'm a big
thank
fan of the Beatles. So I
you.
feel that sometimes that you guys are doing your topics and whatever, we never get a chance to talk to you or listen to kind of what's in your head. And we got like 40 minutes to do it, so that's why
Sure. Tom, how can I ask you, how do you listen or watch us? Do you listen to us podcast or do you watch us on YouTube?
I listen to the podcast.
You listen to the audio. So you're an audio guy. Okay, great. Great.
I actually, it's weird because democracy is failing, and I'm really worried about the world. And all of a sudden, one of yours come in, and bang! I'm like, I'm okay. I stop with what I'm doing, and I have to listen
That's really great to hear,
to you.
and on behalf of Tom, I really thank you for following us. And it's been what a long, strange trip it's been, as Jerry sang. Five almost nearly 5 years to be with him is remarkable. Some days it feels like yesterday. Some days it feels like it's been years because we try to stay very prolific and true to ourselves and what we do, and try to pump out good content just about every week.
Yeah, that's the part where people don't realize like the commitment because you both obviously have jobs. That the preparation for a show, you're not winging it. You're doing
No.
prep work and then you got to promote it and it's a lot. I'd say one of my shows normally for my jazz show,
Your
it takes
jazz
about at least 10 hours at the minimum. And that's
of
like
the research. Yeah, because if you're gonna book guests and authors, you need to do your homework, and you can't just wing it. If you're gonna do that, as I often say on the show, we use YouTube as a medium, but we're not YouTubers. We're podcasters, and we just use that platform,
Yeah. Okay. So this is the first thing I want to say to you is,
Sure.
have you ever done any voiceover work? Because I feel you got that voice that could really work with like cartoon characters or something.
I have not, and I would really be interested in doing some of that work. I know I have a lot of f actually, I have a lot of former students because I'm a teacher, and they do a lot of this work.
Yeah, there must be some kind of there's a somewhere out there that your voice is necessary.
Thank you. Thank you. I would love to dabble in a little of that. Appreciate that. I mean, people have said, oh, you definitely have more of a radio type voice. Well, and I grew up listening to New York radio, so those influences obviously still come across with the show.
You're in Jersey, right?
I am.
With
But
life.
Tom, where are you located?
I'm in Baltimore. So,
Baltimore. Okay. Hey, all right. So
Yeah, my
there you
show was
go.
called Something Came from Baltimore.
Right.
I had to change it because people didn't understand what it was a goofy title. And then I would have to say, oh, it's a jazz, blues, and R&B podcast and radio show. So that now is the new name of the show because
Right,
I
because
got sick.
I love listen to the Beatles one because I written that you did a series just on that, coming to America and all that, and I listened to those, went back, and then I saw that that was a initially just an offshoot of your main podcast, right?
I had a real radio show and a real radio station, and we were doing jazz, and I was trying to connect the Beatles and jazz, and that's where I hooked up with Brooke, and then we started talking and like, how can we expand this? So that's where we started doing it. We were already on our way before the pandemic hit, creating this. And then it was the pandemic that I realized, oh, I'm a Beatle dude. Like, I am way deep in this. And I want to ask you a couple questions so people get a perspective of where you're at with Beatle world. So when did you get involved in Paul McCartney? Do you remember when you started getting excited?
Specifically Paul as a solo artist.
Just like what year, what album did you like pick up and say, okay, that's where I start?
Well, my first kind of new album for Paul McCartney would have to be was Flowers in the Dirt in 89. I was about 8 years old at the time. And the bug was already planted as I kind of like this guy's work a lot. I love all the solo Beatles music, but that album is like was my first burned into my memory as a, you know, new fan, young kid at the time. VH1, the McCartney Week, all the music videos to promote that album and all the videos. That was kind of like where I kind of came into it. And then obviously Off the Ground, and really the Off the Ground, I started with my earliest memory of Paul, but then really it synthesizes really for me with the anthology and Off the Ground and all that. That's kind of where I was a fan. I liked his music, but then once the anthology came out, it was like, there's no going back. And then, I was 14 or 15 then, and it was full throttle, all in for everything at that point.
It's hard to be a 15-year-old and a Paul McCartney fan. It's hard to explain it to your friends. There's a pocket in your school of people who are like total Beatles, get where you're coming from, but then obviously they move away. So as an adult, it feels like I'm collecting my friends through the podcast. Like, these are the friends that I had in high school that understood me. You know what I'm saying?
That were never there, but now are, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And it's okay. Cause like with the new Now and Then, I was totally freaked because I really wanted a good experience. That when the Get Back came out, it blew me away. It exceeded my expectations. And I was like amazed at what a great product that they put out. It was just incredible. So I was able to turn to any stranger and say, did you see Get Back? Did you see Get Back? Did you see Get Back? And I was like, I'm spreading the word. So, but when Now and Then came out, I was like, okay, it's just another project. It's like, okay, it's Get Back Naked or,
right.
It's something that I can't run to the world and say, yo, this is something.
You can't, but Get Back was such a huge production. And of course it being on Disney Plus meant that it was going to be in the stream of consciousness of most people, because a lot of people have Disney Plus, and it was, you could have, as you say, good talking points. Hey, did you see that mega series on Disney Plus? Even to the average Joe, you could have that conversation with people because it was on there. Now and Then obviously is much more narrow, but just to think about it, that was not supposed to be an 8-hour thing. It was only supposed to be 3 hours, or, and then they, you know, Peter Jackson expanded it through the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm greedy because I want every single day, you know.
Right. We want more.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought they would come out with a clothing line of what they were wearing. I think what was really cool is like George came out every single day with something crazy on, and I'm like, I would wear that. I know I'm like almost 60, but
like I'd wear green, the green pants and the green jacket, like all that stuff, right?
The furry boots that he had on was great.
Oh yeah, sure. Glenn John's wearing that like big furry thing, a big jacket.
Yeah, I'm like, there, right there is a clothing line. Okay, I had this idea of asking you this: that your favorite and your least favorite. So, what would be your favorite Paul album, and then what is your least favorite Paul album?
So this is Paul, and this is everything, right? Wings, yeah. Paul, everything together, yeah. Right?
I broke it down into, is it Paul, solo Paul, Wings, Beatles, and then your Paul favorite album, Beatles. It got real complicated. So
all right, I could just do solo and outside of Wings. All right, outside of Wings, favorite Paul album. Outside of Wings, I'll say Ram.
Ram. Okay. What's your least favorite?
Least favorite Paul solo album, I would say probably Press to Play.
Okay. I put Pipes of Peace. Yeah. I was Rams and Pipes of Peace.
Okay.
Your favorite duet, The Man, Say, 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 Ebony and Ivory, The Girl Is Mine, or the two Kanye songs, Only One or 45 Seconds?
I think I like The Man.
Yeah, me too.
I think the man, and we did a show on The Man. I think that's the go-to, because the other ones are just so like the other songs, but they're overplayed. I think The Man is the single that never was.
When it comes down to it, Say, 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 Ebony and Ivory is still in the top 100 as the one of the best selling playing out songs.
Oh yeah,
along with the Silly Love song. So yeah, they were played out. Okay, so we'll do this. Wings songs. Your favorite and your least favorite.
Least favorite Wings song.
Yeah.
Favorite Wings song. I'll say right today on the 15th of January. There's a good chance. I'll say right now, Little Lamb Dragonfly.
Okay. I know it's your favorite.
From Red Rose Speedway. It's probably my favorite. Least favorite Wings song. Let me think about that a second. I'll say, does The Broadcast count from Back to the End?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
You know, it's fair. I was like, listen to what The Man said. Then I went to Arrow Through Me for the best. And then I know that Mary Had a Little Lamb is my least favorite. I just not necessary for me to get.
Okay.
Into. Yeah. okay. So let's do, so the Paul song, Beatle Paul song. Best one, okay. Least one.
Let's see. Favorite Paul Beatles song. I'll say, not going to go obvious. I'm going to say She's Leaving Home. Favorite. And least favorite. Can this be like a cover too? Or it has to be an original?
Yeah, an original. That's
fine. Least favorite Paul. Probably have to be an early one. Maybe P.S. I Love You.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So I had You Never Gave Me Your Money. And then I put Hold Me Tight from Meet the Beatles.
From Meet the Beatles. Yeah.
It hurts to hear. Yeah.
Even then, he loved the title so much, he might have to write it again for his own solo album. For his own band album.
Hold Me Tight. It just seems really, it just hurts to hear. So you've been digging into Paul for so long. And I've been this book that Sinclair did recently. I'm in the middle of it, and I stopped reading all the Beatles stuff because it feels folkloric after a while. So I'm like, I heard this story before, and I don't know if it's true, but you're repeating it. You know, I feel that I've heard this. I could write my own book because I read so much stuff. The Sinclair book right now feels fresh to me, where I think they're genuinely. They're taking away a lot of the spin. They're just kind of like saying things. It, they're written well as a like good writer. So I'm in the middle of it. I can't.
What are you up to about it? Are you up to like Wildlife or one of the, are you on one of the, are they on the tour? Are they in Europe now?
I'm right at in the beginning of Ramp. So I don't know how far that. It feels like it's a big book, but
it's a fascinating book. And we've had them on the show. I got to meet those guys last year when they were over here to promote it. So many, as you say, they're just letting the facts tell the story, which is great. They're not spinning any new narrative. They're just going with the history. And these guys have done their research, man. Like they, you know, Adrian and Alan have done their homework with this. And then so many new facts. Like I didn't realize a song like I Lie Around was as old as it was. You know, you think about it just being the B-side, right? To Live and Let Die, but it goes back to Ram. It was in circulation then. So look, things like that, you take out of that book and you're like, man, these guys are thorough and man, are they on top of it. And volume 2 should be out at the end of this year, I think.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be done by then.
Yeah.
But the reason that I stopped reading the books is that the folkloric piece was like, you could obviously tell it was an anti-Paul slant, Yes. It was a, you know, like John could do no wrong slam. You know, it was like a real weird vibe that I was like, you know, I'm not getting, like, I read a David Bowie one, and I said, this is, oh, him in Berlin. And it, I said, this is not true. Mm. Like, whatever you're saying to me is not true. It doesn't ring true. It seems like you're piecing stuff together and it's not true.
As I learned when I was in Liverpool for graduate school, learning about historiography, you know, you learn more about the author's agenda than you actually do of the actual topic. We know the history of these events pretty much. It's the spin of the author that all these books have, which says more about the author than the actual topic. We know the topic. It's the Beatles. We know every movement and we know the history. The spin of the author is what we're reading about and why.
What have you learned through this whole Paul world, like in the last 5 years, that like kind of blew you away? And then what is the fable that you're like, I'm sick of this fable? Like a lot, of it is what Paul like weeps. Like sometimes Paul has fables.
And he does, and he likes to read, and that's where Adrian and Sinclair and Cozen kind of debunk the things he's talking about. Like, for example, like talking about how, you know, Live and Let Die, and how they were going to, he was going to attend, and the film producer said, no, that's not what we want. Like, that was all bogus. That was not really true. That's just something Paul likes to regurgitate because it sounds well. It just repeats well. It's a good story to tell. The nearly 5 years that I've been doing it, what I've seen, my biggest takeaway is that over the last 5 years, maybe 10, there is finally now, an appreciation and respect for Paul's solo work. And you see it in all kinds of books now that I was waiting in my 20s and 30s for that never appeared. And now here they are coming out of the woodwork, Ted Montgomery, Luca Perazzi, you name it. All these authors, you know, pumping out these fantastic books just on Paul's solo career. Cause as we know, you know, you've read hundreds of Beatles books, you know, or Paul biographies, you know, it's this much Beatles, this much solo for like 40 years worth of his life. And it's now that balance that I've seen since joining the show with Tom is really, it's balanced now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got into the Beatles in 1973, you know, the Red album. It was the Hey Jude album. And I was a little kid. I was 8 years old. I was obsessed with Yellow Submarine. And then from then on, I just kept on moving. And the press, the reviews, all through the 70s for Paul was always damning. It was almost like you felt sorry for the guy. Every like London Town or Back to the Egg, every album, like right now, McCartney 2 is revered as a really kind of technological thing, but it got slammed. When it came out, and people were like, this is trash, like blah 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 blah, you know. It's like, so it's nice that people are going back. And you I'm a big Red Rose Speedway. That was my first Paul McCartney album, and that, even with the additional tracks, you realize, wow, he was really onto something. Like this is a really phenomenal album.
Yeah, and the fans knew it. See, that's where the fans know, because those albums all sold well. If they were not good, they would not have sold. So he didn't really care. I mean, obviously, he did care with the critics. He had the commercial success. He did not have the critical success, as you mentioned, with these reviews. And this is what I wrote. This is what I based my dissertation on in England, was that the fact that there was a very anti-Paul bias in this country after the breakup of the Beatles, because everybody, just mainly the journalistics, you know, all of them sided with John. And then they did not accurately listen to Paul's music fairly without those Beatle rose, you know, colored glasses on to say, let me just judge this on its own without anything. And I guess it's easier to say now 50 years on plus, but in the moment, it was probably so fresh and so raw. Technology was not advanced. All you had to go by. So I know with time it changes, but damn, people should have just been a little more, those reviewers should have been a little more open-minded and, you know, not just, oh, it's just, you know, it's just Paul. And he, you know, he's the one that, you know, broke the Beatles up, and I'm not going to accurately listen or give this album a favorable review. That now people love Ram. People love Red Rose Speedway. People love McCartney too, as you mentioned. It's always been good.
Yeah. 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 It's, you know, that, 1978, London Town came out, and it was right beside Steely Dan's Asia. It was right beside Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. It had that vibe that was just like out there, and it worked well together. I mean, it was equally as interesting as those albums that came out. I totally agree with what you're saying, and I think the reason is that John came out bang with that Rolling Stone interview. He was acerbic. He was off the wall, pissed off. You know, it's like, and it was just like, okay, now I have a basis to like revenge and stuff. I think what happened with Get Back is it debunked a lot of the myth. Like, you see them working together. They're being the as nice as they can with each other. They are being friends. And they're enjoying themselves. All this whole, like, yeah, there could be fights, and I'm sure there was, but it wasn't as bad as it was. Those four people were in there together just trying to bash out a project in a short period of time. What they did was magical. If you think about it, they had so much stuff against them to come up with this concept in a short period of time. It's a damn good album. It's a fantastic album.
Yeah, and you see that in the footage, and that's what Get Back showed, that it was not as bad as it was, and obviously now we know. I mean, Let It Be has that connotation because of the film, but Get Back, thankfully, Peter and his team were able to show that it was you know, just, and you see it. I mean, that at the end of that part one, that where George leaves and the three of them all hug. I mean, come on, yeah. I mean, that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, I think that ruins every single book up to this point. Everything's tainted, you know.
Right.
I don't know how, like, they keep on coming up with fresh stuff about Abraham Lincoln. You know, like, that dude's been dead forever. Where are they getting this information?
Right.
You know, but when it comes to the Beatles and the fact that everyone's writing books about them, they say the same damn thing. And now
it's like that one book that's just on, I forget who, Unmitigated Disaster, the Let It Be Sessions. Who wrote that book? I forget. See, that book just gets totally debunked now.
Yeah, everything it's written is now wrong. Like, it's just now wrong. And I wanted to ask you about Beatlefest. It seems like you're kind of involved with Beatlefest now. Is it still based out in Jersey, which really helps you, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it's based in New Jersey. You know, I went from going as a kid to now being asked, invited to be on panels and discussions and with the organizers, which is a dream come true for a kid who used to go to the thing. Oh, so we didn't have one in 2020. Tom and I were going to go. Obviously, we didn't have one. We didn't have one in 21. I went to Chicago's Fest in 22 and New York's, obviously. So I've gone to the last two in Chicago and in New York as a guest, you know, panelist and podcaster. And that's been amazing. What a great group of people to be around and talk shop with. It's like a family that knows everybody because everybody speaks the same language, you know?
Yeah. How cool is that? I mean, I went the Beatle, I think it was Beatle Fan Magazine. Remember the magazine?
Oh, yeah.
I subscribed to that. So I went to a Beatle Fest, and that was a big deal for me. But now, like, I'm listening to your shows, and you guys are recording your content, and it made me realize, I think, more and more that I deserve to go up and say, "Hey, what's going on?"
You know, what year did you go?
Oh God! So the Beatle Fan thing came out in the 80s. So this would have been like 83 or 84. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's changed. It's changed quite a bit, as we've talked about. It's not as with the advent of online marketplace and stuff, it's changed. Time is, you know, it's the 50th year of the fest this year. Sadly, a lot of the guests have passed on due to their age. So it is, you know, and this is the 60th year, obviously, anniversary. So it is, you know, the fest is, I think, in a kind of, I don't know if it's winding down, but it's you can tell that it's the heyday of the fest was, you know, the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, where everyone, like, it was mania inside there. You felt the energy. Yeah.
You felt it. And it's still a nice event because the same people are there. It's just smaller than what it was when you went, and certainly when I went back in the day.
You've been talking about, I guess, like the Who box set. You've been loving the box set.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Poco Herald. I said that wrong. Yes, Genesis and Elton John. These are the things that I've heard you talk about on the podcast. What is, like, I see that you have some Dylan behind you. What's turning you on? You're going backwards. You're finding some new stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm at a place in my life where these artists, I've kind of known about them, but I didn't dive into them. You know, I'm a big fan of progressive rock, as you say, Genesis, yes, ELP. I love all that music. I have the time now to, whereas 5 or 10 years ago, I was maybe on like Bob Dylan, I kind of knew like a little bit. Now I dove in 5 years ago and I'm trying to absorb everything. Same thing with Procol Harum. You know, so I have to give credit to Sirius XM with them because the Deep Tracks channel, sometimes you'll hear a track that's a pretty deep album cut and you're like, ooh, that was good. Where can I find that? And then that starts a rabbit hole of collecting and finding out new stuff and then opening up. So that's why like I can still find enjoyment out of music that might be 40 or 50 years old because I've never heard it before. So to me, it's new. Yeah. That's why.
See, I am kicking and screaming. I had vinyl and I had CDs. So now, like, I just started doing streaming, and I find it very difficult to find, to concentrate on an artist, on a concentrate on an album. So I'm bouncing around. Part two is that I'm preparing for my show. So I'm listening to stuff that, you know, is like, okay, I'm gonna have to find that hot new jazz album. You know, I'm doing this or that.
Right.
So it's kind of, you know, pulling me away from what I really enjoy is like, to stream and fall in love with an artist. I'm having difficulty doing.
So you're strictly streaming now. You're not physical media now.
There, I've moved multiple times that I gave up. I sold all my albums and then I sold all my CDs. I downloaded them. They're all files.
Right.
You know, like, so I have all the hard drives of everything.
Oh, so you have, you ripped it all. So you have it.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's not the same. I mean, can you do it? Sure, you can do it. I mean, I like it for being on the go. Like you can just listen to it in the car. But if you're home, you know, you want to enjoy a different kind of listening experience. That's got to be tough because you seem like an old school analog kind of, you know, first gen fan. To have streaming only is got to be a little bit tough.
Yeah, it really hurts. It hurts me for a whole bunch of reasons. Like I just feel that, you know, I'm doing a series on my show this year called Why Is It Good and Why Is It Personal, where I'm picking out 12 albums that I like that I know that's not that great. Like there's a Miles Davis album that I love that I know that if you rank it, probably number 20 on the list, you know. So when I have these conversations with jazz dudes, they're like, what's your favorite Miles Davis? I'm going, oh, it's Decoy. And you can see their face like shrink and their smile. They're like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're like dude, what's wrong with you? So it's kind of like the only reason it's my favorite is that I bought that album. I played it to death. I was learning about Miles Davis. And yes, it's dated, but boy, do I like it. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets personal. You know, it's a personal thing for me.
Very personal. I think
when you do, you know, when you're listening to streaming, that whole little connection of me going to Tower Records and buying that thing, it doesn't exist. So
no.
I see that we're in less than 10 minutes and I don't want to keep you longer, but now and then the Red and Blue, they're hot Beatle things. What's your take on all that happened?
I like it. Not what I thought would be. I thought we would get another, you know, Rubber Soul or something or another box after 2022 with Revolver. I enjoy it. Obviously, I think the Red is a little more impressive because you're hearing the earlier stuff with the new punchier mix.
Yep.
But I'm a little disappointed with the different sequencing between the CD and the LP. The LP, I think, should have been sequenced like the CD and not just have all the extra tracks on one disc. Chronologically, that would have been better if it was like that, in my opinion. You know, opening up side five with Now and Then, it should end on vinyl with Now and Then. I loved it. I loved it. It took me a while to warm up to the song. Not going to lie. I didn't love it right away. Then I saw the video and I was done. Once I saw that, and I know it's hokey and jokey, but it's supposed to be. Supposed to be. They're taking the piss out of each other. It's what they're doing. And it's coming from a place of love. So it was fine. I loved it. I thought for what it was great. You know, and we got a little flack about our opinion on it.
I forgot to ask.
Yeah.
Are you getting a lot of flack for your, I mean, like, because you guys are so positive. That's one thing I'd say about your podcast as others, that you're very pro and you're pro Paul and you're pro.
We are, but we'll, if we don't like something, we'll say it. You know, there's plenty of things of Paul songs that I'm not really keen on, but generally we keep it light and positive. Yeah. And people out there that are, you know, breaking down Now and Then as a song structure and form are missing the point They're missing the point because they're not realizing that it's just the last song. They're trying to go out, you know, with one last song together with modern technology, two guys in their 80s at the end of their life and trying to just do one last thing together. Don't break it down like it's Dear Prudence or Rocky Raccoon. Okay. You can't look at that song that way. And that's what some clowns out there do. And we disagree with them. So,
yeah. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, that song was supposed to be like each anthology was supposed to have one new song. So that was the one that was missing. And then that has the grade on you. You know, you're like, okay, well, we kind of had it. Like, it's almost there. Like, you know, let's knock this out.
And they did. I wish that the marketing of it was a little bit of a disaster. I kind of, you know, hearing about it, all of a sudden you get 2 weeks and then it's going to drop. I mean, we were hearing about it since June when Paul let it slip. So, they came out in the fourth quarter right in time for the Christmas market, which is that's typical and that's good. So we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah. I look at the red and the blue. The one thing that's good is that they're cleaner sounding for a younger audience.
Yes.
You know, it's just proven that younger people don't like to hear old set tiny stuff. So now you're playing Love Me Do, which actually sounds really cool, right beside a Taylor Swift song in a mix. You know,
it sounds modern. It's and especially those early songs, those early songs that had not been given any kind of treatment. It gives you a taste test of what's coming, hopefully, with Rubber Soul.
Yeah. Yeah. The other part is that I would like to see supposedly all the, I know we're down to the wire, almost wire, all the Beatles had recordings, like they had their own cameras for Magical Mystery Tour. There's so much footage that I'd like them to clean it up. I'd like to see an interactive video thing where you can go in and you can kind of create your own Magical Mystery Tour. You can pick the sequence.
Oh, you can make your own film because they had all that footage. That's not a bad idea.
With a video, like you can kind of create it all because it needs a little work, but every little piece is there and you can kind of create your all, I'm the Eggman video that's different and it'd be cool. You know, it's like you feel like you're a part of
it. Yeah, there's so much out there. That actually is a really cool thing to think about. You make your own edit. You know, of the film with based on all these cameras that they had, especially Paul. Paul always had the camera rolling.
they find every single shred of whatever they have.
Yeah.
Clean it up, put it in there, and then just say, you know, with a software, I'm sure you can drop and drag and kind of come up with
very, something. Very easily. Yes.
All right. Okay. So the reason I really reached out to you is that one, I am a super fan. Two, you are carrying the torch of the Beatle world. And I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but for the people who are listening, you guys are really, you're my friends that I can't touch. You're my friends that I can't turn to the side and say, yeah, like I love like Kisses on the Bottom. Yeah, of course you're talking about, you know, there is some kind of conversation where you're passionate about that I can't turn to people in my neighborhood. They think I'm strange.
Right. So, this is our world. This is our world and our community. And it's a language that we as fans can only understand. That's why when you go to these conventions and stuff, it's great. You meet people, you might just met them or whatever, but you all know the music inside and out. And that's what brings everybody together. It's the power of the music.
Yeah. Yeah. And the passion level that the experiences that we had as we were raised on them and how we've intertwined them into our whole
no matter where you are in on the timeline, if you're first generation or you're second like me, it doesn't matter where you are. It's because that love of the music and where you are with it and where you and when you discovered it, those are those memories that you kind of carry with you, you know. And then you can connect with people on, and that's the beauty of it.
Great. I love it. Two Legs, Andy Nichols. Yes. Tom's old house. I did watch a couple of YouTubes. He had this awesome like Paul McCartney album thing behind him.
Yes.
And I wanted to copy that. I just moved to a new house and I went, ooh, I could do that. That looks so good.
Oh, yeah. He got that off the ground cutout cardboard thing that he has now in his new place. But I think he's gonna be moving again, I think, eventually. But I'll get to see him. He'll be out here in New Jersey in a couple of weeks because he's coming to the fest. So it'll be great to see him and have him here again for the third one in a row, 22, 23, and 24 now. Wow.
Good, good. And yeah, so I thank you for everything that you guys do.
Oh, our
You
pleasure.
are, yeah, you are touching people, and they don't even, I mean, and not in a negative way, not a bad touch. You are touching people in a really important way. And I'm one of your guys' fans. That's why I reached out to you.
Oh,
And
my
so I
pleasure. Thank you for listening and supporting us. Sometimes you forget, you know, when the in the hustle and bustle of your day, you know, if a podcast or something, you know, connects to somebody and, you know, brings somebody some joy, then, you know, we're doing something right, because we just, you know, we speak from the heart most, you know, most of the time, I think. And people hopefully resonate with that, and that we're just going to keep on doing what we're doing.
yeah, good job. Yeah, I thank you. I thank you very much
Thanks.
for joining me today.
Thank you so much,
Yeah.
Thomas. Really appreciated it.
You've been listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Seeley.
It was a big thrill to chat with Andy Nichols today. His contact information is in the show notes. The podcast information is also in the show notes. Please support everyone above mentioned. It is that time. Let's fade out with an Andy Nichols favorite. It's from that Red Rose Speedway. It's a deep cut called Little Lamb Dragonfly. Little Lamb Dragonfly.